Welcome back, everybody. We are talking with David Icke about the new book, The Perception Deception, and also the bigger picture, really, of what is going on, the makeup of the world, and broad strokes here, obviously, in trying to basically nail down the experience that we're having. And I think, I mean, when I look back into history as well, you realize how much of this is part of our very, very makeup, and to draw the parallel between what has been, you know, quote unquote, real in the natural world, what has been artificial, or lines that I see that have been very much blurred. I mean, if we think back to it, we've had thousands of years of conflict with each other, with basic survival as the principles are on this planet. You know, tribal warfare, then we have warfare of nations, world wars. This is just something that's kind of part of our makeup.
Yeah, I'd say it was part of our program. It's interesting, what you've just described, Henrik, is massive examples of the mass generation of this very energy that this distortion feeds off.
I mean, that's not something that's going to be easy to break, right? Because it feels like it's part of our genetic makeup at this stage. How do we get ourselves out of that, do you think?
Well, that's absolutely right. I couldn't agree more. It's exactly where I'm coming from, that this program was put in, well, on an energetic level, but in a holographic expression of that energetic level, it's within our genetic structure. We're only able to override it by moving our point of attention or expanding our point of attention. For me, what we are, in our infinite form, is a point of attention with an infinite awareness. Now, that a point of attention can be the entirety of infinite awareness. That's what I call the infinite, the all that is, has been, and ever can be. What am I describing? All possibility. Or we can have a point of attention so tiny we think we're Ethel Jones working down the store, and that's all we are. Most people, because of the program, because of the way that society is structured and the information sources of education and media, etc., what they're telling people to believe, most people are perceiving reality only through the five senses, a bit more, you know, into the subconscious, but mostly overwhelmingly through the five senses. And if you do that, then the system has you. Because once you are perceiving only through the five senses, you have one place to look to get a grasp or a grip or an understanding of who you are, the nature of life, and the world you're living in. And that's basically outside of yourself. And what comes back from that, from the five senses, the media, education system, peer pressure, all these things. Basically, you're in this world and you are of it. And if your point of attention is that focused in the five senses, but if you can expand that point of attention to realize that you are infinite awareness, having an experience as, you know, a person who works in the store, it's not who you are. Your body is not who you are. Your name is not who you are. Your life story is not who you are. It's what you're experiencing. Your infinite awareness, having that experience, well, suddenly what you perceive through the five senses becomes very different. Not only that, because your attention goes out into consciousness beyond this reality, you're now getting intuitive insights and understandings into the reality you're directly experiencing that you would never get through the five senses because they can't access that level of awareness. And that's when, like I say, people in that state, that's the ones they call mad or crazy or eccentric or extreme, because they've seen the madhouse for what it is, and those in the madhouse still believe the madhouse is real and sane. They can't understand why anyone could say that it was crazy. And it's interesting, when you look at the quotes of Don Juan Matos in the Carlos Castaneda books, the Central American shaman, he talked about the flyers to Castaneda, and he described them in the terms that we talk about in terms of the energetic archons, the energetic jinn, the energetic demons. And there's a quote I've got here from Don Juan Matos, which blew my mind when I read it a few years ago, because it's so spot on what I'd come up to see by that time. And he says to Castaneda, he's talking about this parasitic force. And interestingly, again, the Gnostics in the Nagamadi documents say that the archons are a parasitic force, that they do not have what is termed intentionality, what I would call creative imagination. And they can't have that because they're in a distorted state. Because of the distortion, they don't have things that in a balanced state others in that state have. So they have to manipulate humans, for instance, to create their own prison. And it's if you think about it in these terms, if you give them a blank sheet of paper, the archons couldn't put anything on it. They couldn't create anything.
Yeah.
But you give them a paper with things on it, and they will twist them and they will invert them. They can do that. And the other thing that the writings talk about is that the archons were experts at manipulating perception by creating illusions. It fits so magnificently. It's just staggering. Anyway, this quote from Don Juan Matus in one of the Castaneda books, in fact, the last one before he died, before Castaneda died, Matus said, "Think for a moment and tell me how you would explain the contradictions between the intelligence of man, the engineer, and the stupidity of his systems of belief, or the stupidity of his contradictory behavior." This is the point I made earlier, Henry, about developing humans to the point where they can enslave themselves with technology, but not to the point where they can realize that that's what they're doing. He said, "Sorcerers believe that the predators have given us our systems of beliefs, our ideas of good and evil, our social mores. They are the ones who set up our dreams of success or failure. They have given us covetedness, greed, and cowardice." This is the distortion. "It is the predator who makes us complacent, routinary, and egomaniacal. In order to keep us obedient and meek and weak, the predators engage themselves in a stupendous maneuver." Stupendous, of course, from the point of view of a fighting strategist, a horrendous maneuver from the point of those who suffer it. "They gave us their mind." The predator's mind is baroque, contradictory, morose, filled with the fear of being discovered any minute now. It put another way, they gave us their mind. They got the human energetic fields attached to the distortion, so they become more and more an expression of the distortion. They gave us their mind. And therefore, they start to manifest the distortion's mind because they're so attached and influenced by it. And this is, I'm absolutely convinced of what has happened. It's my feeling, again, it's not something you'll hear every day, but it's my feeling that the Gnostics were absolutely right when they talked about the Archons creating a bad copy of this, what we might call universe, of this reality, because people who have near-death experiences, often they have experienced an earth which looked like this earth, this reality, much better way of putting it, but it was much more vibrant. It was much more joyous. There was none of this negative, low vibrational emotion. And for me, what they were experiencing in that out of body state was the original copy, which is not a copy. It's the original reality, which still exists. Exists beyond the one we're experiencing. So if you think of it, I mean, it's great today with all the computer stuff on one level because we've got the analogies to make in terms of what we're genuinely and really experiencing. It's like taking a download copy. And originally, it was a bad copy, but it was a copy that reflected a lot of wonderful things in the original. And what's happened since is those great things still in the copy have been systematically destroyed. Because in the Archon world, what we call life, in other words, we need a planet of life to survive and interact with it. They are an inversion. They need death. They need death and destruction. And so what they've done is systematically change a copy of something that was about life, and they're turning it more and more into something that reflects their reality which is about death. This is why when people say, why are they killing their own planet? They're not killing their own planet. The vehicles we call the Illuminati bloodlines, they are merely vehicles of this force which feeds off death. Thus, they come and go. They're just vehicles to change this world into a world of death so this archontic force can take it over, to change its frequency and to change its atmosphere. This is what Fukushima's about. Yeah. This is why millions and millions of more radiation is in the atmosphere than there was 50 years ago. And you know that guy that is very controversial, but he would be because he was challenging he's challenging the scientific norm that he was once part of. But this guy, Eben Alexander, he's an American neurosurgeon. And in 2008, he virtually died from E. coli meningitis. And for a week, he virtually his entire brain shut down, including that part of the brain that scientists say are generating the death experiences as an illusion. So it couldn't have been in his case. And only the most primitive part of his brain stayed alive to keep him alive. And he was like that for 7 days. He wrote a best-selling book called Proof of Heaven about his experiences. Because for those who haven't heard of this, Eben Alexander was a neurosurgeon, and he was brought up in an environment at home that was absolutely dominated, not least through his father, with the belief that mainstream science and material science was absolutely right and anything out of that was wrong. He said in his book that being a neurosurgeon, he experienced people who died and then were brought back to life, and he said they told him these near-death experience stories, and he thought, yeah, well, very nice story, lovely story, but it can't be true because consciousness can't exist outside the brain because the brain generates consciousness. It doesn't. It's just a vehicle to put to express consciousness in this reality through the hologram. But the reason I'm going here in relation, Henrik, to what we've talked about so far, is that the first place that he went to, and if he was really stuck in the material version and vision of everything, that would have affected his frequency. And thus, it's not surprising that he went to an area, first of all, he went to some beautiful places, including seeing, again, this wonderful, beautiful, joyous, vibrantly colored Earth that looked like Earth, but there was no suffering, there was no negative emotion, there was no fear. This is, I would suggest again, that the reality of which a copy was taken, a bad copy was taken, which we call our world now. And but the first place he went to, he calls the realm of the earthworm's eye view. I think it's what a lot of New Age people will call the lower astral. Anyway, what happened is he said that he found himself in this place, and he said it was like visible darkness, and he was like being submerged in mud, yet he was also able to see through it. He said he had a form of awareness, but no self-identity. He was just aware of where he was, but there was nothing else. He had no memory of anything else, just that I'm here. And like I say, he calls it the realm of the earthworm's eye view. He said he heard the sound of rhythmic pounding that was distant yet strong, a little like a heartbeat, but, quote, darker and more mechanical, like the sound of metal against metal, as if a giant subterranean blacksmith is pounding an anvil somewhere off in the distance, pounding so hard that the sound vibrates through the earth or the mud or wherever it is that you are. He said, quote, I wasn't human while I was in this place. I wasn't even animal. I was something before and below all that. I was simply a lone point of awareness in a timeless red-brown sea. He then said that gradually he started to regain more self-awareness and a bigger self-awareness. And this detachment that he felt, I'm here, but so what, I don't care, started to fade. And he said he started to, the place started to become scary to him. And he describes in the book how reptilian, worm-like creatures were crowding past him and sometimes rubbing against him with their smooth or spiky skins. Faces bubbled up out of the darkness and became ugly and threatening. The pounding intensified and became like, quote, the work beat for some army of troll-like underground workers. Here is a major point. He said he became aware of a smell, quote, a little like feces, a little like blood, and a little like vomit, a biological smell, in other words, but of biological death, not biological life. Because this place is, I say this is the archontic realm, and it's about death. Just as we need to breathe life, it needs to experience and feed off death. That's why it wants to feed off low vibrational emotion. This is why Satanists that are interacting with these archontic entities, this archontic distortion in their rituals, this is why they are all about death. They're about sacrifice. They're about doing it in graveyards and anything to do with death. This is why wars are death rituals for these people. And interestingly, you know, Satanists have told me over the years, former Satanists, so they say, many, many times, and it's interesting the way I've just described or read out what even Alexander describes he was hearing. And he said at another point that he heard dull roars that changed into dim rhythmic chants that were both terrifying and weirdly familiar. And what Satanists have told me is that when they're doing the rituals in our reality, the entities are doing compatible ritual in their reality. Mm-hmm. And because the two rituals are interacting, they are basically creating a compatible energetic field that connects the two while the ritual's going on. This is why Satanists do the same rituals basically they've done since Babylon and before. It's because there's a certain energetic outcome that they generate. And once this compatible energy field created by the dual rituals in the two levels of reality it becomes powerful enough, these entities can slip through that gateway, that doorway, that energetic kind of connection into the rituals, and they can manifest. And people have told me many times how they've seen reptilian entities, they've never said grey entities, funny enough, but reptilian entities and other demonic type entities they've described. And in fact, Aleister Crowley and L. Ron Hubbard both described doing what they called workings, which was to create a vortex or portal through which entities could come through and manifest. Similar thing. And the thing is that the more that society is manipulated, this reality is manipulated to reflect death and destruction, the more in frequency terms it becomes closer to this archontic frequency band, which I suggest that even Alexander was describing, and therefore the more influence it has over this world. So when people say, what's the answer? What they're expecting is a structure of fighting the system, of fighting the enemy. But what use is that? That's just feeding the enemy as they perceive it. It's the old story. It can't be that simple. It is. We have to love each other. If we love each other and, you know, love those that are trying to crush us, not to the point where we let them do it. My goodness me, I've been 25 years standing up to it. I go on doing it. But you don't do it in hatred. Otherwise, you're feeding the beast. So these simple messages that mystics and others have delivered through human history, we need to love each other. We need to care for each other. We need to do things in integrity. This changes everything because we're no longer then operating on a frequency that this low frequency can influence and impact upon. And as the more this reality becomes dominated by death, destruction, and war and conflict and fear, we get closer to this archontic realm so that it can influence us more. This distortion, I mean, what was Ibn Alexander describing there except a manifestation of a distortion? But the more we open our hearts, the more we love each other, more care for each other, the more we have integrity between each other, vibrationally, frequency terms, the further away we go from this archontic realm and the less and less and less influence it has in impacting upon our perceptions and our therefore behavior. It's so simple, but people don't want to go there. Because they're caught in the program and they're caught in another expression of the distortion, they think to fight the enemy, they have to stockpile weapons. And no way. It's not the way. A lot of people,
right,
the conspiracy research movement, might not want to hear this. And they might just laugh and dismiss it and go and stockpile some more weapons. But they could do it forever. They're going to change a thing. Love is the answer, because the closing down of the heart vortex is what's got us into this mess, what's got us into this frequency.
Yeah, it's a very, very, it's a good point and interesting one as well. So where do you draw the line, I guess, in terms of the advancement of the, you know, the global police state and the everything that's happening right now with invasions of countries? And you know, you get to that position where you realize that, all right, at some point here, there might be people literally knocking at my door, you know, trying to invade, you know, into my home and into my life in certain ways. And it's happening with the tippy toe tactics that you've mentioned. So it becomes increasingly difficult really to pinpoint, or again, the line that you have drawn and said, okay, here but no further, even that becomes kind of blurry and fuzzy. So where do we need to stand up and say no? And I mean, because at some point this is going to be turned into self-defense, right? And that an application of violence, is that right in those conditions, do you think?
Well, I would never go there. That's just me, because I'm feeding the beast if I do.
Yeah.
But what all of us have been trying to do while we've been in this arena is to stop it getting to that point by alerting people to what's planned. However, I've said all along that it's got to get a lot worse. Well, I'm not saying that now. I've said it before a long time ago. It's got to get a lot worse and more in your face before most people will see it, because they, you know, they don't want to see it. They don't want to see it. You know, it's like, yeah, just change the subject. I don't want to face it. I want to go and watch the football, or I want to go down the pub, or want to you know, go and, you know, play a computer game or something. I want to escape from it. I don't want to accept that this is true. So there comes a point where it's so in your face you can't ignore it anymore, and that's where we are. And from here on in, Enric, it's going to be very, very interesting time seeing how people respond to that. Because I know from, you know, being here at the People's Voice since we went on air in November, and the response we've had, and the response I've had walking around the streets of Wembley here in London, where I'm staying in a spare bedroom at the moment. I'm staying in a spare bedroom that's just big enough to get a bed in it, and me along the side to get in the bed, because I'll be ever there anyway. I'm in most of the time, but you know, when you go into a pub or something, and people come up to you, you know the difference between that and what happened a few years ago. And you know by what they're saying to you that they've gone some way along the road to realizing what's going on. There's no doubt about it. Vast numbers of people are seeing it. And a lot of them are seeing it because it's being put in their face. It's becoming so blatant. So they become more open to it, and other people become more open to it that they talk to. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see where we go from here. But it is a bit of a race now, because on one level, you've got the awakening, which is absolutely happening, and not in the way that I would like it, and not to the depth of understanding that I would like it, but it's happening. But you've also got this police state, this technological surveillance grid in all its forms, unfolding faster and faster and faster. So I've always said that, well, not always said, of course, but I've said for many years that something around 2016, 2017, we're going to have a good idea which way this is going. Because by then, the awakening will have met the suppression and oppression, and we'll see what happens. But if, you know, there's a difference between fighting the system and not cooperating with it. Because, you know, at all levels, it requires our cooperation. Once we get to the Hunger Games society, the equilibrium movie society, where people are taking drugs by law and they're being measured that they've taken them. This is where we're going now with this nonsense about they're introducing where you swallow an edible chip with a drug and your mobile phone goes off or your doctor's does if you when your next dose is due if you've not had it. This is a stepping stone to this forced drugging. We're getting forced drugging in the water anyway, and the microchips. Once we get to that point, well, you know, your mind's gone anyway. But before we get to that point, they still have to have our cooperation and another quick thing, this transhumanism and replacing people with machines to do the jobs that this system wants. That's fundamental too in making humans expendable in terms of needing their cooperation. So we have a window of what we call time here where the system still needs our cooperation to get to where it wants to go, to the point where it doesn't need it anymore. And so this is a vital, vital time. And if it needs our cooperation, then let's stop giving it. And you know, once you open your heart, it all comes down to that. And once you start to realize that you are infinite awareness having an experience, then what happens to you becomes irrelevant anyway, because you're doing what you know to be right. And if anything happens doing that, well, it bloody well happens. I'm infinite consciousness. So what? you know, I'm infinite awareness. I just move my point of attention to something else. Because if we go down the armed resistance route, well, symbolically and virtually, literally, you're trying to take on a system that has state-of-the-art weaponry, including energy weaponry and laser weaponry, with the equivalent of a pop gun. I mean, it ain't gonna happen. But if we cease to cooperate, then they can't, at this point, they still will not be able to go forward and anything like the scale they want without our cooperation. But if we continue to cooperate with our own enslavement out of fear or out of it's not my problem, then we will reach a point where they won't need our cooperation anymore for the reasons I've described. So between now and 2016, 2017, Henrik, I think it's the eye of the storm, if you like, and it's when everything is going to be decided.
Robot armies, who knows, you know, how far this will go. It has to be a switch in people's attitude and understanding of what they're part of course. And then you have that interesting flip side to this, that the harder the authorities fight and push themselves, the more people will start to wake up to it because they become suspicious of it. I can't tell even from people in Sweden who you know, I never thought would mention anything about this kind of stuff. It's like they're slowly getting onto it. They realize something's going on, you know, and they become that inherent resistance in them is growing. And to a certain extent, sure, they hardened in that process. But at the same time, that's a positive sign. It's a direction in the right direction that there is, you know, that I don't want to cooperate with this. I understand something is wrong. And it's horribly to see this, though, at the same time, how the world has hardened in the last 15 years. And again, it's really, I would say it's really after 9/11 where this, you know, the blatant fascist state ever really unfolded. But it's, I don't know, some days it feels it's really dark, you know, in that kind of process of what's going on.
I mean it is dark, and by dark it is distorted, it is inverted, but you're absolutely right, mate. There are more and more people that are seeing it because in many ways a very simple thing. When you are manipulating covertly to bring about a transformation of the world in your image or the image of your manipulation, then there comes a point, if you're going to do that, where the world in your image has to start to manifest in front of people's eyes. So I said years ago, there's going to come a point, a window of opportunity, when this stuff's going to have to break the surface where it could be seen. And then we've got a chance, because people that will not go there and seek it out in the hidden will have no choice but to see it in the scene and in its impact on their own lives. So this is an extraordinarily important point in this story, in this journey, where that which they want to transform the world into is becoming more and more blatant and more obvious and more tangible. And so those that even in the five senses who can only perceive the five sense tangible world, that's where it's happening now. It's come out of the hidden. It's not completely out of the hidden, or we'd be at the end of the road where they want to take us, but it's out sufficiently for it to be perceived by the five senses. So that gives us a chance. It gives us a chance. And there's the great line that I said years ago from that song, freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. There comes a point where you've got nothing left to lose but to stand up for your freedom. And we're heading for that point fast.
Oh, yeah, certainly. Now, another perhaps somewhat of a strange point here, but the process of what drives the system, I guess we could just refer to Earth at the moment, or the solar system, whatever, and contained within that we have nature, the climate, their overall biosphere and everything else, the life within that, that system, that engine, the dynamo that is that, is partly, I don't know how to call it, but shutting down. It feels sometimes like there are crutches being built, you know, by the people in place, you know, in the elite, basically, to keep the momentum of things going. It's almost like they want to take over the weather and manipulate it and do what they will with it. But at the same time, it's just a bizarre feeling I've had in the last couple of years that it feels like that whole dynamo of it is like shutting down, and now they're trying to take it over to keep it going, to keep the momentum of this, you know, kind of experience that we have of this energy, their battery, if you will, so that it will sustain them and keep going. Do you see what I'm getting at? Bizarre point, perhaps.
Yeah. Well, in this reality, mate, there are no bizarre points. All bizarreness is legitimate, really.
Sounds good.
level that we're at. But, you know, one thing, as I said earlier, they've taken this bad copy and they're seeking to take all the good things away and all the life out of it, sucking the life out of it, so it becomes a place of death, which is what they feed off and what their home environment is like, if you like. But what's also happening, I feel, and it's affecting a lot of people, there is an awakening, and part of that awakening is about the name of a book, the first book I wrote when I had my own original awakening, called Truth Vibrations, when I learned about a vibrational change. We chatted about it before on your show, that was going to wake people up. This is what I was told in 1990, that I was going to go out on a world stage and deliver great secrets. And in this period of the rest of my life, this Truth Vibrations was going to impact more and more on people's perceptions, and it was going to break up the solidity, and it was going to wake humans up from their coma. The ones that were least in a coma would wake up first, and then even, you know, people that were solid gold asleep would start to wake up. And so that's happening, and there is a kind of a defense mechanism against that. And that, I suggest, is that they are seeking to create a sub-reality, almost an isolated reality, in that part of the Earth's atmosphere that we humans interact with. Part of that is changing the radiation mix of the atmosphere, making it more and more irradiated for many reasons. And I think the chemtrails on one level come into this as well, into what I'm describing. Mm-hmm. And another element of this sub-reality is the internet. If I can find the paper somewhere, doesn't matter, I can remember anyway. That I was reading this week about something that they're calling the outer net. And this is a wireless internet source from many satellites in space, which is being orchestrated by an organization which is funded in part by the Open Society Foundations of George Soros, you know, that man that has humanity's best interests at heart. And this outer net is being sold as overcoming internet censorship by filling in all the gaps and actually coming from space so that it can't actually be blocked in the present internet system. And of course, George Soros and all those people connected to him, their life's work is to give people freedom of choice and freedom of communication. So obviously there's another reason for it. And I suggest that it's another layer of this sub-reality. If you go, high enough up into mountains and stuff, you could probably find places where you still have the ability for unmolested, largely unmolested thought without technological radiation interference and manipulation. But if it's coming from space, you've lost even that.
Yeah.
And for me, the internet has been created from the start to do this. But like all these elements in the control system, while they still need human cooperation, they have to be sold as a benefit. And there are many, many benefits in the internet. I mean, we're talking now and expressing one of those benefits. But of course, the idea all along was to sell the benefits and let the benefits run for a while, although I think the scale of this information circulating has surprised them and I think shocked them to a large extent.
Right.
But what they're doing now is using every excuse they can, and there's many more in the pipeline, to censor and shut down the good side of the internet, leaving only that which benefits them. What benefits them? It's a surveillance operator's dream, the internet. But also, they're developing it as an electronic collective mind. Because we're biological computers, I saw a story this week which was really significant, very significant for the fella, but significant on a bigger picture. And it was the development of a artificial hand, which for the first time, they said, has the ability to feel texture, feel whether something's soft or it can feel akin to the human hand, not completely, but akin to it. And the reason they can do that is because the body's a biological computer, which in the brain communicates through electrical information exchange, and the technology communicates through electrical information exchange. If you can make those two forms of electrical information communicate with each other, then the hand can communicate to the brain and the brain can feel touch, and which it couldn't before in technology. And in the same way, they're talking now about having brain-computer internet interfaces and chips in the brain which will be able to interact with computers and the internet without actually a keyboard and all these things.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's all part of this transhumanist whole deal is about making humans so connected to the internet world that it becomes a collective human electronic collective reality that supersedes the wider collective reality of consciousness communicating as one field, a unified field. And again, what's that doing? It's pulling you not only into the five senses, it's pulling you beyond them into technology. And that's the idea, to so connect us to the world of machines and the world of computers that they think for us, we no longer think for ourselves.
Yeah.
That's this sub-reality is designed to get us to attach to it and beyond the internet attachment to create a radiation fields in the Earth's atmosphere that are able to be conduits for information broadcast within human brainwave frequencies so that it actually enters the brain and we perceive it as our own thoughts and our own perceptions. Here we are, the perception deception taken to the next level. And this is what smart meters are about, and the smart grids and anything with smart in front of it is designed to speak to all the other things with smart in front of it. And so when you have a radiation field from a smart meter in a business or a home, it's not only communicating, as even people like David Metraeus, when he was head of the CIA, admitted, it's not only able to communicate information to a central point about how many people are in the house, what rooms they're in, how many times you open your fridge and all that, it's able to send information the other way into the field in your home or business broadcasting on human brainwave frequencies. So this is another expression, the smart grids and smart meters, of this sub-reality they're trying to connect us to. Again, and we keep coming back to it, the antidote to that is to open your mind to your true consciousness. And if you want to do it the quickest way, open your heart to your innate consciousness. That's the biggest opening to expanded awareness, much bigger than the brain, the mind. It's the heart vortex. And once you do that, you're getting your inspiration, you're getting your perceptions, you're getting your insights from beyond the realm that this archontic force can manipulate. Thus, you can see what those within that, within the grasp of that force, cannot see.
Absolutely. I think it's about the creation of an artificial biosphere, and that might be at the end of it completely digital, and maybe in the meantime we'll see something that has this kind of semi 50-50 interface. But you know, anything could unfold in that type of world and reality. We'll probably have to take vaccines on a regular basis just to maintain our bodies, steroids, so that the body won't reject the mechanical parts implanted. I mean, this could just go in a number of different ways. But I think that there always will be an outside of it. I mean, we can see it with the accumulation of the, you know, a combination of Agenda 21 pushing people off, you know, the land and nature into the big cities. And, you know, you can see how this is going to be developed into these mega cities, mega hubs. You might have communication lines, or not communication lines, but you know, underground trams or something connecting between those cities. But on top of that, outside of that, I still think there will be a natural world. You know, like so many movies and TV series have explained, like Tripods, a British series that show that too. These people are living on the, you know, the outside of that, who is viewed kind of like the Romans viewed the barbarians of old. You know, they're not civilized, right? Not in the cities there. So.
Yeah, but I, you know, you mentioned vaccines there. They're already developing genetically modified food crops that actually deliver vaccines.
Yeah, so that's right.
You know, and deliver drugs. So you can see where that's going. And of course, you've got a water supply. And what's happening in terms of, you know, getting people off the land? The endless ways, making farming outside the corporations economically impossible, family farms, smaller farms. And we're going through something here in England at the moment, which is extraordinary levels of flood as a result of extraordinary levels of rain.
Yeah.
And on the People's Voice the other day, there was an interview with someone who'd worked at the European Union, who was saying that actually, see, what they're complaining about in one part of England called the Somerset Levels, which is an area obviously very low, hence levels, but the rivers and the canals have been cut out for a long, long time, going way, way back, and what they were doing was dredging them regularly, and so if you had a lot of rain, it doesn't matter because they were deep enough to deal with it. And then suddenly, and this has been a big row and scandal in Britain in the last 2 weeks, they stopped dredging them. And what this man was saying is that actually that was a European directive not to dredge, because actually he said he was aware of documents and legislation coming out of the European Commission, of course, unelected, which was that they weren't to be dredged, because those lands were to go back to non-human use.
Yeah, I'll look at that.
And so when the British government comes out and talks about dredging or not dredging, he was pointing out it's all a stage show, because they know at the highest level of government anyway, and certainly the civil service does, that they haven't got a choice whether they dredge or not, because the European Union is deciding whether they dredge or not.
Yeah.
And this other big thing, massive thing in relation to that, which has come out of nowhere and is now everywhere, all over the world, and that's fracking. The idea of fracking is, what's about fracking? It's about death and destruction. It's about killing the land.
Yeah.
And what they're doing is forcing this high-powered water into the geology of the land below the surface, full of 600 to 700 chemicals They're using phenomenal amounts of fresh water to do it. And once they do it, then the chemicals make it impossible to use again. It's getting into rivers. It's getting into drinking water supplies below the surface of the land. And at the same time, it's releasing radon gas, which cumulatively is extremely dangerous.
Yeah.
It's doing all these things. And what it's doing is, if you've not got a water supply, then you've got to move. Just as if your land is going to keep flooding because you're not dredging anymore, you've got to move. And so when you seal the scale, I mean, I've been reading some stories in the last few days. You've got areas of America that have got 10,000, in one case, 17,000 fracking wells.
Yeah.
And then you see the pictures of them, and what does the landscape look like? It looks like it's dead,
which it is.
These are designed, again, to drive people off the land and into these mega cities you talk about. But again, you know, it's still about cooperation. There's a very few people fracking compared with those affected by it.
Well, exactly. And, you know, again, the continuation, where are the EPA and the other environmental organizations in these situations? You know, the government still gives, you know, these companies, or if they're private, even they're smaller, you know, businesses that do this as well, but they continue to give them the contract to do this and the rights to do it. They're protected under the law to destroy the earth in this way.
That's
insanity, and it's all planned, you know.
Yeah, it's insanity from our point of view, because we come from a point of view of life. But if you come from a point of view of death, it's not insanity, it's genius. And so, you know, in this country, they're now not only giving fracking permissions all over the place, they're actually changing the law so they can frack under your house without you even knowing.
Yeah.
Without you having any say in it or even knowing they're doing it. And when they take all the checks and balances off to allow the free flow of something that is so blatantly destructive to life, here we go again, you know it's the agenda.
Yeah.
You know, it's come out of nowhere. And yet all over the world there are these fracking protests which alert you to the scale at which it's happening. And you have... This is, again, the program, the distortion controlling your perception. You have police officers at these fracking protests around the world that are protecting the corporations and the fracking, which is destroying their drinking water and the land of their families and their children.
Yeah, beating the heads in of these protesters, yeah. You know. Yeah.
The protesters that are standing up for life, they are protecting those standing for death. And so that's what happens when the program's got you. You, as the Matrix movie said, you become so inured, so controlled by the system that you protect it from those that are challenging it.
Yeah, and they're all like, I'm just doing my job. I'm getting paid. Things are good for me. No problem there. And, you know, at the same time, these are, you know, people who don't—they don't do anything. They don't generate anything. They just—they live off of, you know, hard-earned you know, tax money that other people have worked for, and these governments are just not generating anything. They're just taking it, stealing it, really, because it's involuntarily, and then they just fund the destruction of the whole mechanism. And that's why I always get so angry when people beg for more, you know, government control or regulation and everything. It's like, are you going to hand over the same, even more power to these people? It's not going to work. The criminals are going to latch onto whatever system it is in place that has been granted to oversee the protection. People have to take their own, you know, responsibility in that regard and wake up and you know, like the police officer in that regard, he has to understand, you know, what it is that he's doing or and being part of. Otherwise, it's going to be lost, you know.
But what's happened in the last at least 20 years? It's probably started before then. Is that we've had a very demonstrably around the world, Britain included, very much included, the recruiting of people in authority, law enforcement, police officers, not on the basis of ability, not even on the basis of intelligence, but on the basis of personality. They have systematically employed the narcissists, the sociopaths, and the psychopaths. And it's very simple cause and effect. If you employ psychopaths, you get psychopathic behavior. Employ narcissists, you get narcissistic behavior, which, I mean, just go on YouTube and put in police brutality. I mean, crikey. You'll be there for a year watching videos.
Yeah.
And I've said to these people, you know, you think you have power, you have no power. You have no power. The power's in your uniform, which is an extension of the state. It's not in you. I mean, take your uniform off. Okay, where's your power? Go and get another job. Where's your power? You have got no power. The power's in your uniform, and you're just animating it. And if it wasn't you, it'd be someone else. This is what they don't get because, you know, people like psychopaths, they love to feel they have power over people. But they don't have power at all. It's their, you know, their power's in the wardrobe, not in them. But that's the kind of personality. My father used to say, it's not just that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. It's that power attracts the corruptible. And that is true in terms of dark suits and politicians, and it's certainly true in terms of uniforms. And they've systematically recruited that personality type on purpose. And so you get, you know, the genuine police officers who are trying to come from a genuine space of fairness. I mean, they're being driven out by the system and the narcissists and the psychopaths because they can't stand it anymore. And those that are staying put, I mean, every day must be a nightmare working in that environment because they can. I've talked to them. They know what's going on, but they feel there's nothing they can do about it because they speak out and they're gone.
Yeah, yeah. Well, exactly. And that's also a good point. That's a flip side of that argument, you know, that you have. Then all of a sudden you have a situation where all the potential good people kind of quit and we let all the bad people just kind of take over and run the show. But I guess it all has to do with what you said earlier that, all right, but if they are recruiting it at a certain type of personality for those reasons and they kick out everyone else that's good, then it would have to be a really clever person who would act like a psychopath, but then inherently has a good heart and trying to, you know, change the organization from within or something like that. But that gets increasingly complicated. So it's we're kind of in a conundrum here, aren't we?
Well, I think, you know, where it's all leading is that the population in general needs to cease to cooperate with their own enslavement.
And, yeah, yeah.
If that means policemen leaving the force, if you like, because they refuse to take part in the enslavement of others because they can see that's what they're doing, then that's a positive thing in a way. I know people will say, well, that will leave the bad guys to run it, but that's going to happen anyway, the way the system's going, because every time a decent copper retires or leaves, a psychopath is employed. It's not every time, but the majority of times around the world. I mean, America is an incredible example of that, and the TSA at the airports and other transport hubs now. You know, there have been TSA people, decent people, who have actually gone on radio shows and spoken out and said, look, they're recruiting psychopaths on purpose.
Yeah.
Because they want them to intimidate the people coming through the airport. So, you know, this is real. And in the end, the people have to unite. And if that means, you know, people have to leave law enforcement because they won't enslave people, then that's as it must be. And they must join with the non-cooperators among the public, and let's join as one unit, you know. I mean, even at the Bilderberg event in the summer in near Watford, or just on the outskirts of Watford, north of London, that I was at, with that 2,000 people turned up. It was fantastic. In the grounds of the Grove Hotel, because they, in the end, they were forced to let us go there because there's nowhere else for us to take so many people.
Yeah.
And some of the police there that were policing it, you know, not all of them. There were some unpleasant people there, but some of them that they were basically saying, "Good on you, mate."
Yeah.
You know, we can see what you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. How about that? I do hope that there is a lot of people that are That slowly perform that kind of turn from within side of the system, obviously, to a certain extent. And then another part of me feels like, I'd hope it just all crash and burns, and just really like try to start this process over again. But that's just that entire, the internal dialogue rather that you have with yourself in the terms that you try to, understand the situation and nestle your way out of it and try to find the right way to go. But this is what we do. We talk about it. We try to figure it out. We try to awake people along the process and just try to create a better world, a better place, So that's it. But David, I think we should begin to round things up for this time. It's always a pleasure talking with you. It was great having you back again. I want to give you some more if you want to give out some of the details here about the website, of course, the book again, The Perception, Deception, The People's Voice.tv. That's where you can see the live feed and everything else. And what about the Wembley? You have another one now in 2014, you said, in coming spring here?
Yeah, October 25th, Wembley Arena. Funnily enough, but, synchronicity and all that, it's about, 3 or 4 minutes in a car from where this studio, The People's Voices, are kind of strange. Oh. But there are, it's called Wembley, Lay. There's a lot of meridian ley lines go through this part of London and down through central London, interestingly. Oh. It's a massive arena that holds 10,000 people, 11,000 people. And it's on October 25th. I'll be speaking all day, about 10 hours in four sections, and pulling the things together. And, I only speak at a big event in London once every 2 years, because I don't want to come back and just repeat what I said a year earlier or a few months earlier. I like to put some time between them, because then more and more understanding is more insights, more awareness, more information. Mm. So you can take it forward. Every time you do something, you've got to take it forward and progress. Otherwise, you're just going round and round in circles. I've been shocked over the years when back in the 90s I used to speak at multi-speaker conferences. I was always put on the little room at the end of the day when there was no one there. In those days when I was starting out, really, in America, places like that. But I would watch some of the speakers talking about various subjects, and they were interesting, and that's good, and that was interesting, and then. Years and years later, like 10 years later, when I went to the last multi-speaker event I ever did, and a lot of the same people were there, and I dropped in and had a look, and they were saying exactly the same that they were saying 10 years or more earlier. And I don't see the point in that. It's like Socrates is supposed to have said, wisdom is knowing how little you know. Therefore, there's always more to know. It doesn't matter how much you think you know. Yeah. I mean, the Perception Deception is nearly 1,000 pages, and it's it's the result of nearly 25 years of research. But there's always more to know, always more to know. And tomorrow there'll be more to know, and tomorrow there'll be more to know. And that's the way I live my life. Whatever I know there's more to know.
Absolutely, that's what keeps us going. I think that's a really good outlook to have, and that also gives you a certain kind of. Pause both to let in new information, but also to you process everything that you learn in a different way. Certainly there's good with knowing and understanding, but it's also good, I think, with a certain degree of uncertainty, so that you continue to question even what you've learned and everything. So we continue to exercise that the mental and the philosophical muscle. So that's a really good point, David. But let's give out the websites here again. Then davidicke.com, obviously the main website. Pick up the book right there, and then thepeoplesvoice.tv. Thanks again, David. Keep up the good work, and we'll touch base again soon.
Thanks, mate. Just one very quickly on what you just said. It's very interesting. I don't believe anything. And people think, well, you've got to believe something. No. I have a perception of how I see things at any point in time. But it's not a belief. It's a perception of how things are at any point in time. But I also know there's always more to know. So I'm light on my feet. I've got my trainers on, and I'm ready to go anywhere the music, the information takes me.
Thank you so much for listening today. And thank you again for joining us here in the members section. We couldn't really do this without you. So our thanks and gratitude goes out to all of you, our lovely and beloved members out there. So thank you again. Also, my special thanks to the crew. That includes Frederick, Lana, Elizabeth, and John for all their hard work so that we can pull all this together. All right, well, we'll be back in just a few days again. We have a couple of interesting shows lined up for you. Next up is Brian Forrester and L.A. Marzulli on the Paracas elongated skulls and the DNA analysis from that. We have Marty Leeds on Pi and the English alphabet. We are also going to talk with Uri Geller. And you do not want to miss this one. This is an interesting one. And this is actually not just about his, spoon bending, shall we say, but actually a whole lot more about his time as a as an agent for the intelligence services out there, including the Israeli Mossad and the American CIA. I think this is a very interesting program for those who can actually connect the dots and also kind of read between the lines a little bit, if you will. So if you're a regular member, I think you'll really appreciate that particular program. So don't miss it. That's coming up. We have also Guja Börjesson on the strange murder case of her daughter from Sweden, Annie Börjesson, and the consequent cover-up story around her murder that occurred in Scotland. Very bizarre and also interesting case. All right, well, we'll wrap up for this time. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you again for joining us. Have a great rest of your day, and we'll speak to you in just a few days. Bye-bye.